Big Decisions on NDTV Profit, the personal finance podcast that helps you make the right financial choices.
Hi, thanks so much for joining me. This is Big Decisions on NDTV Profit, and I'm Alex Matthew. Every week, we get you insight that you need to make your most important financial decisions with confidence. Over the past few weeks, we've discussed why life insurance is missold so much, the rules of the heart and the mind that make you a better investor, and what women should know about when it comes to the laws that govern inheritance. If you'd like to listen to any of those conversations, you can find them on our social media pages or on any of the podcast platforms out there. This week, I'd like to take the conversation on inheritance forward. There's been quite a lot of chatter about inheritance of late, and that's because of the debate about inheritance tax. But that's not the focus here today. We've established that conversations about inheritance are not the easiest to have, and the discomfort that is associated with those conversations is why, more often than not, it doesn't take place at all. What's the solution then? And what's the best practice? To talk about the ideal approach and the problems that can crop up, I'm joined today by Dipali Sen, Founder and Chief Executive Officer at Srijan Financial Services. Dipali, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
So in your experience, and you've been doing this for quite a while, would it be fair to say that most people don't plan for wealth distribution?
You hit the nail on the head. So while we enter into financial planning decisions, in the first meeting itself, we kind of let people know what comprises. So wealth transfer being the third step of financial planning. We have literally everyone agree to its importance and that how it's most critical. But in my last 11 years since I set up this firm, I would have had only 0.5% of the people who actually did financial planning end up actually writing a will. This despite the fact that they kind of agree to the importance and we collaborate with them in providing them a draft will. We do the compilation of assets and kind of have it presented to them. But it just doesn't happen.
In follow-ups that you've had with these same individuals, what do they say as to why they're not doing it?
We'll do it. I think it's more to do with their subconscious thinking that they are going to live forever. I mean, it's very sad. It's very, very sad because we know actually death is the most ultimate truth.
Yes.
But somehow it seems to them that it'll happen to others, not to me. Inertia, there's a strong inertia. I have to compile assets, which is also there. I have to take a call on whom to distribute. They're just shy of
Accepting
and pinning it. And as we all know, we are not the best executors. As in, we talk a lot. We all Indians talk. We may plan.
It's not, I would go so far as to say it's not just us as a people. It's everywhere that you will look. And I think that this is a global phenomenon. But let's get into the details of this, right? And to take the point forward, you say that the people that you've interacted with, only 0.5% of people actually do this. And I would go so far as to say that a very small percentage of the population actually takes financial advice.
Absolutely.
And so therefore, very few people end up planning to distribute
Absolutely.
Wealth. But let's talk about what happens when you don't, right? Because in the first episode, or rather in the last episode, we talked about the laws that govern inheritance. But then from a financial planning standpoint, and I'm sure that you deal with this as well, what happens if there's no will?
So right from involving a lot of expenses to the heartburn and the struggle and the conflict of getting a probate in place. Probate can't be there if a person dies intestate, but trying to get the succession certificate, the letter of administration from the court, it could take anywhere between 6 to 8 months. It could take anywhere between 2 to 3 lakhs. And trying to get together the various heirs as per the succession to give a NOC if that's what you want. It only gets messier. It leads to heartburn and a lot of precious time and money is lost.
Okay.
When now, it can just be a simple 2-3 page document, clearly mentioning what needs to be done to whom in terms of listing the assets and labeling it to
people. We'll come to the writing of the will and how to do this, because I'm told that, and I have been told many, many times, that it's a very easy process. But before that, let's talk about how things stand right now. And most people have nomination, because this is required when you make a financial investment, usually. Why is it that nomination in and of itself is not enough?
Okay. So a nominee is a trustee of the asset. And so if there are, let's say, two holders, either a survivor, the first holder passes away, the second holder is holding it, he can even redeem or act on it. And even when he passes on the assets to the nominee, an heir, if it's different from the nominee as per the succession, Hindu Succession Act, can always contest it. So nominee is only a trustee. The final beneficiary in that sense is the
legal heir.
Heir mentioned in the will. And in case where there's no will, it is as per the Succession Act.
Exactly. And we just established that in the last episode, the various aspects that come into play. It depends on the community that you belong
Absolutely.
To. And of course, in most situations, all of the surviving members of the family have an equal right.
Absolutely.
And so therefore, it can be a very complicated scenario. We actually saw a case a while back where you were prompted to either make a nomination for a financial asset or you had to opt out.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, so many people opted out. Why do you think that is?
It's very illogical, but I think more to do with ignorance or inertia, which is the easier way out, just stick it in the box. I'll have to think. It's very, very sad, and it actually is very illogical. Why would anyone do that? But then we know that stupidity is infinite.
Okay, so let's talk about the ideal situation then. And let's lay out everything that you need to do. First, you said that in a financial planning process, this is step number three. Very briefly, what are step number one and two?
So the first step is risk control, which is about having the adequate insurance, life, medical, other insurances, and emergency fund. The second step is wealth management, where we try and strike balance between risk and return, so that we minimize risk and optimize on performance, so that we beat inflation and taxes. And the third step is wealth transfer.
Okay.
And in the wealth management, the second balance which we try and strike is between today and tomorrow.
Okay.
You should have enough before retirement, enough after retirement.
Okay. So when you're talking about wealth transfer, one would assume that the first step to take is to make a record of everything that you own. How do you go about doing this?
So that obviously we take the help of the client, right from any movable to immovable assets. Financial assets are more under control because they're easier to give, let's say, the folio number, policy number, house document, depending if there's no loan lying with the client. Other things also, what we try and tell them is go to your locker, let me know what all is there so that we can document it and give an estimate that, let's say, there are four sets of jewelry, each averaging this, or to be specific, I have an emerald, I have a jadau or diamond set, and this is what it contains, a bangles or earrings or a whatever, a bracelet.
So, and so assume that you have, and a lot of our viewers are joining in, and perhaps will take notes and identify how to do this. Is it something that you write on a piece of paper? Is it an Excel sheet that you maintain and you update over a period of time? How do you suggest is the best way to go about doing this?
So the best way is to try and think and kind of sit with your stakeholders, whether they are, let's say, parents, or you've lately got some ancestral property or jewelry. Sit with your spouse, try and understand what all he, she has. List that down in terms of right from a car which you have or a, let's say, a painting you have or a piece of jewelry or gold or financial instruments, insurance policies, everything. It has to be everything. And while in the will we do have a clause, anything which is owned by us or by me and has been not covered, it should go in a certain proportion.
Sure.
But it's always for perfection and for easier execution, it is imperative that you list down everything.
Okay. So therefore, all financial assets, all immovable property, and what
personal
other
details?
So what other details? So for example, would you add documents to that? Supporting documents is what I mean. So share certificates, etc.
Yeah, of course. So share certificate, a DMAT account holding, physical shares if at all, mutual funds, insurances, all these are FD details, are financial documents. Company, provident fund, EPF, PPF, NSC, all those.
So I've heard of couples where, and a lot of them, where one individual is more, shall we say, inclined towards managing the money, and the other is happier to take a more relaxed backseat role. And I know of one particular individual, this lady, who sends her husband an Excel sheet every quarter. So at the end of every quarter, there's an updated account of all of their assets. And this is a practice that she has been following for several years. Is that a little too much? Would a one-year statement suffice?
Oh, okay. I do that.
Oh, you do that as well? You do that once a month.
So it's once a quarter is good enough. I mean, an update on investments is what I send once a month. It's not that every month we keep acquiring things to kind of update. So I think this is a very good practice. And you are absolutely right. In households, even if, when I try and involve both of them equally, husband and the wife, if both of them are working or not working either, there's one guy who's inclined to take a dominant hand on matters related to money.
That's the case. All right. So, and it's a good idea to have a regular statement sent out. And of course, therefore, because of the day and age that we're living in, if you can maintain a digital record of what you have, then that would be ideal.
Absolutely.
We're going to talk about a few of the aspects related to what comes next. And that is, in essence, the most important part of this conversation, which is when to make a will, how to make a will, what gets included. But we have to do that after a very quick break.
Sure.
Do stay tuned.
Big Decisions on NDTV Profit, the personal finance podcast that helps you make the right financial choices.
Welcome back. This is Big Decisions, and we're talking about inheritance. Now, we've established already at this point that most people do not follow the necessary steps in order to ensure that their assets are distributed as they would probably want them to be. And the first step that Dipali, my guest today, has spoken about is the need to maintain a record of what you own and to update that and share it with your dependents on an ongoing basis. Now, the other aspect to focus on, of course, and the most important aspect, Dipali, is the making of a will. And a lot of people think about doing this, don't end up doing it. At what point do you start thinking about this? Because some people say, hey, you know what? I'm way too young to be thinking about writing a will. Are you ever way too young?
I think it has to be done as of yesterday.
Okay.
The minute you have something which you kind of want to give away to someone, and death is unpredictable. I mean, I'm not going to get a WhatsApp message from whosoever saying that I have one day left. I should tie my loose ends.
Yes.
So we ought to be ready so that we don't leave any footprints which could be muddy or could lead to heartburn. Mm. So the idea of writing is a will to begin with starts with listing down all assets, personal, financial, real estate. Discussing it with the stakeholders in terms of distribution. I would want to give this
guy. Who initiates that conversation?
It could be anyone. I mean, husband or a wife.
No, but I'm talking about, so for example, and we spoke about this at the start, it's a very difficult conversation to have. And, you know, can you imagine a situation where a son or a daughter goes to a parent and says, let's talk about inheritance. Yeah. The likely response to that is, what are you implying and why are you having this conversation? So is it better for the person who is to distribute the wealth to initiate this conversation?
See, the answer lies in your statement. The person who has to distribute needs to do it. But as you rightly mentioned, I mean, we call Chirag Tale Andhera, that guy is not woke enough to do that, or he needs some nudge, which is what the alleged beneficiaries to try and do in a very nice, warm, polite way, because at the end of the day, it's reality of life. It is not trying to tell the parents that we need money or we are waiting for some occurrence to happen. But it's only sensible to tell them that it's more joyful if people know what's going to happen. Not in advance. I mean, after they pass away, for people to execute things, if it's done seamlessly, without friction, that's better. And it could be a good way to say that I have written my will. For the kids to nudge their parents to do, it might be a good idea to tell them that I have done it.
Right.
So you may want to consider.
Okay, that's a good way to do it. Yeah. Yes.
And another thing which I think is, you plant the seed, you can't push the river.
Yes.
You may want to do frequent nudges or follow-ups. What will be, will be.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so that's a fair point. Let's get down into the nitty-gritties of it then. Assume that I have to write a will, Dipali. How do I go about doing it?
So we'll need your list of assets, real estate, financial, personal. In terms of, when we say financial, we kind of need the folio numbers or the policy number.
Or the fixed deposit numbers.
Receipt.
Yeah.
Savings bank account number, DMAT account number, mutual fund policy numbers, and so on and so forth. Plus, we'll, let's say if it's a house, we'll need the address, we'll need the jurisdiction.
Sure.
If it is a car, the car number, make and all that.
What
and
about a business?
Jewelry. Yeah, also if it's obviously the business, we need all the, if there are any liabilities, that should be listed down. If there are other co-holders, stakeholders, that needs to be mentioned in the right proportion. And then you need to peg those assets to whosoever you intend to give in whichever proportion.
Okay.
And it is a good idea to mention, if you're singling someone out who would have been a successor or a heir as per the Succession Act, and if you don't want to give, it might be a good idea
to spell
mention
that out.
Yeah, I am not giving because you already have.
So, but how do you word it? How, so you're saying that you make a list and you put the person's name alongside that?
So you write the person's name, his PAN number, saying this asset is in this proportion, I want to give it to this person after I pass away. I mean, all those assets similar, you do that. So for simplicity, typically you may have 2-3 heirs. So it might be good idea to list everything down, write its value, and then decide a proportion.
Okay.
Specifically also you can write, why specifically could make sense, where you have, let's say, half the mutual funds, you have X as the nominee, the other half you have Y as the nominee. You may want to mention those in, pinned in the same way, or else if for every asset you have 50-50% or 33 each, you may just want to say of the whole financial assets in this proportion I hope to divide.
And the easier the better, but the more specific the better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so that makes
laser
sense.
Laser pointed is better.
So, but then let's talk about, once you have written this will and you have spelled out all of your assets, and one would assume that you have to update it over a period of time. As assets, you would have to revisit it.
Yeah.
But what happens once you've written that will? Who do you give it to?
Yeah, so you need to have two witnesses who will sign once you have, as a testator, if I'm preparing my will.
This is a physical document.
Yes. You can have a printout, you can sign it, but when I sign as a testator, the two witnesses should be there to see it, I'm signing it. Similarly, when they sign, I should be there to see it. And there should be an executor appointed to execute the will, because I'll not
separate
be there.
Separate from the two individuals?
Separate from the individuals and separate from the beneficiary.
And the two testators cannot be the beneficiaries?
The testator, I'm the testator. Oh. You're right. The two witnesses should not be the beneficiary.
My bad.
You're absolutely right. So the witnesses are different. Executor is the person who's going to execute the will in your absence. Also, if the beneficiary is a minor, you need to mention who will be the guardian for that beneficiary.
Understood. So just to be very clear, I am writing the will. I need to find two individuals who are not the beneficiaries to witness. They need to sign, and I need to find a third person to execute that will.
I don't need to get him on board, but I can mention his name and let's say PAN number and address, that this guy is the assigned executor for the will.
So then, and then, how does anybody know that I have written the will? If these two individuals have witnessed it, that's fine. But then what if somebody claims, oh, this person never wrote a will?
So normally what we do is, the person who is the testator announces it, because if you want to assign someone the role of an executor, it's always better that you ask that person and you tell him that I am, for these reasons, assigning you the executor. And then you may want to keep your will in a safe custody or a locker and let the executor know that it's lying here. And you may not want to tell the beneficiaries, up to you, whether they are heirs to this will or not.
Okay.
So executor definitely needs to be taken into confidence.
Okay. So, okay. So it's very clear at this point what needs to be done. Now it comes to the distribution of the assets. Ultimately, this will is going to be executed at some point. That is the reality of life. What does one as a beneficiary need to bear in mind when it comes to the implications of this? And I ask this from the perspective of a lot of individuals that have, for example, left the country. There are some people who are non-resident Indians. There are some people who are no longer citizens of this country, but who are named in wills. Is there a difference in the way that they receive these assets or the way that the state views these assets being received by them?
So the country laws will apply when they get those proceeds. That having said, when the deceased or the testator passes away, is the executor's responsibility to kind of reach out to those people, because it could have been possible those beneficiaries and heirs don't know or don't, I mean, they could be financially independent and not really caring so much about. Mm-hmm. So executor kind of lets those people know, and that's when the process, the ball is set rolling. He will go to the court to get a probate on the will, which will authenticate the will, post which the actual execution will start. Okay. Of distribution of assets or transmission the way it is intended to be.
Is it better to go through a lawyer for this probate?
Probate, you'll have to approach a court to get.
Yeah.
But while the process of writing will is there, you must also approach, like we as planners would write a will, but we, it's always better that I also consult a lawyer to see, while I would understand their story, how they want to have it distributed, and
the legal writing of exactly. This needs to be,
so there is no loophole or yes. Some anticipation which
is unclear,
some possibility which can be worked out and which is ambiguous. So we kind of have unambiguous, clear, seamless will for,
and as much
smoothness.
As we would like to think that we can write like lawyers do, it's
absolutely.
Practically impossible. Yeah. I struggle to read
absolutely.
Some of those documents.
Yeah, yeah.
It is written, as they say, in legalese, and it
and
sounds like...
And they have
like,
the experience on their side yeah. on knowing what has gone wrong, what could go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So they would rather preempt that and have something watertight. Mm. Because after that, there is no recourse.
And there is no tax on anything that you receive via a will?
Yes.
As things stand right now.
Yes.
There used to be a different story
yes.
though. There used to be a different story. All right. So I think we've more or less covered all of the aspects of why this is so important. And if I think we've reinforced that over a period of time. And I think I would encourage everybody watching and listening to write any specific questions that you might have around this inheritance topic and around writing of a will. And Dipali, it's been an absolute pleasure having
Thanks
you on
so
Big
much.
Decisions.
Thanks for having me.
Viewers and listeners, it's been an absolute pleasure bringing you this. Of course, it's not the most easy conversation to have, but hopefully we've moved you in the right direction so that you can have this conversation with your loved ones. Thank you so much for watching. This is NDTV Profit.
Big Decisions on NDTV Profit, the personal finance podcast that helps you make the right financial choices.